Chapter 8. Ulanor, Low Orbit.
Once more, dear friend, once more. Now is the moment.
Nearly all of the Cult Mechanicus personnel were already on Ulanor or in atmospheric transit. Aboard the Cortex Verdana, the eruption of surface defense systems burst across the sensors as a stream of alerts and surveyor spikes. With two-thirds of his divisible consciousness plugged directly into the assessor arrays to monitor the ongoing landings, Georg Zhukov felt it like a burning sensation racing through his being.
"It is astounding," said Laurentis, gazing at the images arranged on the visual displays.
Hundreds of installations appeared, massive thermal plumes and energy signatures like celebration lights flickering on the screens. Around the cities, the force fields gleamed, encompassing entire settlements.
"Not an attack moon. An attack planet?"
"Thousands of soldiers are dying,"
Delthrax snapped in response to his fellow tech priest's enthusiasm.
"Our assault is crumbling before our eyes."
The surge of signals from orbital and ground-based data feeds crackled, lightning-like, through Zhukov's synapses, the equivalent to a blinding, deafening pulse. They emerged in a wave from a battery of outposts almost directly below the Martian ship's orbital arc.
"We are being targeted,"
the Dominus roared across the vocal and suboral channels of the Warforge.
"By what?"
inquired Delthrak, tapping into the data stream. Zhukov did not have to reply. His subconscious reaction directed power to the main void shield generators and shut down reactor plasma inlets as he braced the starship for the inevitable attack. Anti-torpedo las weapons thrummed into life, though they were of virtually no use against surface-launched missiles. The targeting arrays would not have time to adjust in the moments between the projectiles breaking atmosphere and striking the ship in low orbit. Damaged teams and repair servitors were dispatched to their emergency positions, while the more vulnerable parts of the ship were evacuated completely, except for servitor personnel. A vessel the size of the Cortex Verdana had no chance of evading the incoming attack. Instead, the ship assumed its maximum defensive posture, the equivalent of curling into a fetal ball and awaiting the worst. They did not have to wait long. Less than a minute after detecting the first defense activations, Zhukov sensed a ripple of energetic particles erupting from one of the ground installations. In less than a second, the beam struck the Cortex Verdana.
"Gravitic attack!"
The warning raced through the ship's systems. Klaxons blared, those that could made fast to whatever they could hold. The wave of anti-gravitic energy passed through the void shields without effect. It slammed into the planetwood's decks, instantly crumpling meters-thick armor, tearing chunks of plasteel and adamantium from their housings. The physical damage was significant, but worse still, the beam ruptured the basic fabric of the gravity well, dragging the ship towards Ulanor. The sudden acceleration created a form of weightlessness on board, overpowering even the artificial gravity. Personnel and equipment were sent flying from the decks, slamming into ceilings and bulkheads as though caught on an aircraft in horrendous turbulence. Zhukov felt pressure doors bursting and vacuum seals shredding under the immense forces. The Dominus knew from all previous reports that even the massive engines of the Cortex Verdana could not resist the power of the gravity beam. Instead, he diverted all remaining energy to the physical defenses and energy shields.
"Atmospheric entry in 30 seconds," groaned an alarm servitor.
The Strategium was a scene of chaos, tech priests and servitors thrown like dolls as another wave of impossible gravitic energy flared along the Cortex Verdana. Zhukov had no time to spare for the broken bodies littering the deck. Every navigational shield and altitude jet burst into life at his command, easing the massive starship into a better angle of entry. Even so, the flare of frictional heat from the thickening atmosphere overloaded the ship's sensors. Blinded, the flagship of the Adeptus Mechanicus plunged into Ulanor's skies.
"Launch everything!" bellowed Corland. "Anything that can drop, get it off the ships. Any vessel that is already dispatched must break orbit immediately."
Thane was already barking commands at the Vox officer, demanding reports from the surface. Warning alerts wailed into life as the Alcazar Remembered took evasive action. The battle barge fired its main engines, heading towards Ullinor in an attempt to break the target lock that had overloaded its surveyor systems a minute earlier.
"Incoming missiles," growled Thane from a monitor station. "A dozen, at least."
The flat areas, chosen as landing grounds by their forces, had in fact been the covers to immense silos of anti-ship guns and missiles. Not just physical missiles targeted the orbiting fleets. Powerful gravitic manipulators were turning ships inside out, pulling them down to fiery deaths in the atmosphere, or tossing them into deep space. Strangely pulsating green rays sliced warships in two, while cluster missiles engulfed descending dropships with thousands of detonations and rapid-firing flak guns smashed apart plummeting drop pods.
"We can't stay here," snarled Corland.
He started towards the door of the command bridge.
"Alert all combat personnel to prepare for launch. Drop pods and Thunderhawks. We're evacuating, Lord Commander. Attacking while we can."
"And Lord Vulcan?" asked Thane, following his Lord Commander. The remaining Space Marines left their positions, their roles handed to unaugmented officers and servitors. Fist's exemplar across the ship would be doing the same. Every warrior ready for battle would be at his drop station in minutes.
"I will speak with them myself," said Corland.
He took his helmet from his belt as the doors wheezed open. With a last look at Thane, he fitted the helm.
"Brace for impact."
The mechanical tones of the alert servitor across the ship-wide vox did nothing to convey the urgency of its message.
"Impact imminent."
Corland grabbed a bulkhead, pressing close to the plasteel. The others found similar handholds and waited. 3 seconds later, the Orc missiles erupted around the battle barge in a storm of fire and metal. Void shields flared black and blue, warp shunting what they could before their generators overloaded, exploding with showers of sparks in the bowels of the ship. The Alcazar Remembered shook from prow to stern as the remaining energy and debris slammed into its starboard side. The entire ship lurched. Lights flickered. Corland felt as much as heard the rip of tortured metal shuddering along the length of the battle barge. Damage reports flowed through the vox, but he cut them off and signaled the quarters of the Primarch. And like before, Vulcan responded immediately.
"The Orcs have woken up," said the Primarch. "A quarter of the fleet's already in ruins, my lord," replied Corland.
He hit the call rune for the conveyor, and chains rattled in the shaft beyond the heavy doors.
"They hit us exactly when we could do the least about it, mid-drop." "And your strategy, Lord Commander?" "We have to complete the drop, Lord Vulcan. Our ships cannot stay in orbit and survive. The army will be stranded on Ullinor."
Corland heard the grinding noise of the Primarch's chamber doors across the link.
"While these weapons remain active, there can be no return from the surface." "That does not concern us, does it?" Corland said.
The conveyor arrived and he wrenched open the door. He and the others crowded into the cage within. Thane operated the controls, taking them down to the launch decks. Memories crammed into Corland's thoughts as tightly as the warriors in the conveyor. Of Adamantua, his brothers penned in, dying by the score with no escape. The buzz of suppressed vox traffic reminded him of the confused warnings and alerts of that dreadful day.
"Lord Commander," Vulcan had been speaking. "Corland, respond." "It is of no concern," the Imperial Fist said, pushing back any thoughts of his chapter's demise. "The Orcs were ready, no matter what. The dilemma has not changed. Attack or return to Terra, we came to Ullinor with a single purpose. That mission remains. The beast must die."
Beaumont watched with mounting incredulity as the barrels of 3 immense cannons emerged from the splitting crater. Secondary guns broke free of rock cladding in the surrounding hills. Within seconds, they opened fire, spewing a torrent of exploding shells and pulsing blasts into the dropships, bringing down the Astra Militarum forces. He looked up into the sky and saw drop craft burning, falling like meteors. Showers of debris rained down, some pieces as large as battle tanks.
Charred skeletons and bloody body parts fell too, striking terror into the squads of guardsmen fleeing the carnage. The main cannons boomed into life. Beaumont's auto-senses blotted out the ear-shattering noise, but the shockwave threw hundreds of Astra Militarum fighters to the ground, screaming as their eardrums burst. The wave swept onwards, tipping armored vehicles and sending land speeders and Navy aircraft into mad spins. Beaumont's armor registered the wash of pressure over him with a row of amber warning sigils. The High Marshal could just about track the supersonic course of the shells towards orbit, but in moments they were lost in the high cloud. His eye was drawn to the upper reaches. His disbelief increased. A scarlet comet fell, larger than anything he had ever seen. Increasing the resolution of his auto-senses, he magnified the view. The descending ship was wreathed in fire, trailing broken plates and corpses like smoke. In general shape, it was an inverted pyramid, a stepped ziggurat of many levels. He could see the blazons of the Adeptus Mechanicus in many places, and realized it was the flagship of the Dominus. Despite its calamitous fall, the ship was not without control. Beaumont could see that its trajectory was flattening sharply, some mechanism of the Cult Mechanicus lessening the speed and incline of its course. Distance and size made its rapid descent seem almost stately. The Cortex Verdana hit the ground many kilometers away, just beyond the horizon. The Orc cannons fired again, even as a bright flash of detonating plasma lit the distant sky. Beaumont turned away from the fallen ship and voxed his warriors.
The Xenos have hidden their holes well, my brothers. Now they are revealed and our vengeance will be swift.
He activated his jump pack and bounded back towards the crater.
In attacking, they have left themselves vulnerable. Into the breach they have opened. Destroy the guns. Praise those that slay in the Emperor's name.
Esad Wire, known to a few by the title of Beast Cruel, let the body of the greenskin slip to the ground, its throat crushed. His sinskin suit was hidden beneath a few scraps of clothes and armor he had looted from other targets. The silhouette they gave him was more of a disguise than the shifting camellia line, though he could not hope to look like an orc. He had smeared a little of their filthy blood and spoor over himself to cover his own scent, having been briefed on orcs from the Officio Assassinorum's mission data repositories. Despite its limits, his rough silhouette had confused the greenskins he had encountered long enough to get in range with weighted fists or needle pistol. Grandmaster Vangrich had expressed the uniqueness of the mission. Rarely was an operative of the Assassins dispatched to slay a non-human target. Their purview was far more concentrated on the rogues and rebellions within the Imperium. In fact, there was almost nothing about the Orcs at all in the archives, and Vangrich had drawn in favors from the Inquisition to supplement their records. Krul stepped over a corpse, past two other dead orcs that had been lounging by their armored wagon. The complacency of the aliens, the sheer casualness they showed in the face of a massed human attack, worried him as he pulled himself up into the driver's position. Settling into the bucket seat, he looked over the crude pedals and controls, working out where throttle and gearing systems were located. He heard a dull, distant thunder that he instantly recognized as the retort of a large cannon. It continued for some time, many guns firing not quite in unison. He waited to hear the corresponding explosions in the city, but nothing came, yet the fusillade continued. Perplexed, he stood up, the better to see over the corrugated iron and broken plastic rookeries of the Orc shanty piled up on the foot of the mountain that was Gorkagrod. The haze of the Force Dome gave everything beyond the city's borders a greenish cast. Streaks of shells disappeared into the cloud. Looking left and right, the assassin saw the flashes of other weapons, beams and blasts, and oscillating green waves from emplacements somewhere beyond the city's semi-derelict outskirts. He had seen dropships descending all afternoon, accompanied by the occasional shower of artificial meteors when the Adeptus Astartes had made secondary drops. The assassin had paid it no mind. He had been expecting floods of alien warriors to pour from Gorkagrod to fend off the attacks, and had hoped to use such activity and confusion to slip through the Orc city. Now the lack of response from the Orcs was explained. He had seen no defences as he had brought his commandeered aircraft down, but could see that the firepower being unleashed into the sky and towards orbit was devastating. Dropping down into the seat, Krul started the engine. Its throaty roar accompanied a cough of oily smoke from the pierced exhausts flanking the machine. He slammed his foot onto the throttle pedal and sped out of the courtyard and into the street beyond, crashing through a crowd of greenskins that had emerged from their hovels to stare at the anti-orbital attacks. One bounced from the large iron buffer on the front of the battle wagon, another went jolting under a wheel. Ignoring their death cries, Krul powered the vehicle uphill, heading as fast as he could towards the inner city.